Lecture Theatre 3. Now, it's a pleasure to welcome Dr. Azila Reisenberger back to summer school. She's not given a course for several years, to our great disappointment. We're delighted she was able to offer one this year. She's often travelling at this time. Her previous lively and engaging courses on the Bible and Hebrew literature have always attracted a large number of people, and here you are again, including people who have to line up outside and trickled in one by one. Azila is the head of Hebrew in the School of Languages and Literature at the University of Cape Town and a widely published scholar. Her particular interests, in addition to Hebrew literature and the Bible, are gender issues, South African cultural experience, and the need for and nature of translation across languages and religions. She's active in various women's organizations, and since 1989 has served as the rabbi of the Jewish Progressive Community in East London, South Africa. In addition to her academic work, she's also published 7 collections of poetry, and I think another is to appear soon, several plays, and a novel, The Other Booker Prize, which is for sale, it says. Along with 2 other writers, she will be reading from her work in the free summer school extra program tomorrow at 1 p.m. in LC2. Not all of you will fit in, and not all of you, no doubt, will be here, but it is a free program, and you will be welcome if you can fit in. Please welcome Azila. I'm sure it will be a very interesting course.
Can we switch off this one so I can put on this one without squeaking?
Doesn't affect it.
Doesn't affect it. Okay. Hello. Nice to be back. Last week on film, I was skiing and I realized to my dismay that I'm not really popular. So I'm not a very good skier, so I apologize if I'm wearing shoes. The doctor said that I must walk straight. So I apologize for this funny appearance. We have a very special course. We are going to look at the Bible. We're looking at the Bible for some years now, intermittently with different themes. And this year, we are going to have 5, I became modern. We have 5 lectures. The first one today is not maybe as interesting as the others, because it's more like housekeeping and getting things in order, the geography of the Bible. And so if tomorrow I return to something, and Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So today it is called the canon. The canon means the book. Funny enough, the word canon comes from the church, meaning the books that have been agreed upon, but today also they call it the English literature, the canon. In other words, that is the literature that is considered as absolutely the core of and the most important. Tomorrow, we are going to have a lecture about the power of word, of speech, of every single utterance, and it's called What's in the Name. The next one is the book as reflection of life. It will be so interesting what we can get from stories in the Bible. But don't think that I'm trying to be pseudo-anthropological. Just to be careful. Don't think that we try to... If you find one verse in the Bible, there is a famous Sarah Breast said,
sort of know what we are up to, let's start with the Bible. The name of the book.
Did you notice that in the, when I wrote the name of the course, I didn't say the Bible? Because then people will ask me, are you talking about the Old Testament, the New Testament, etc.? What Bible? So, first of all, from the word Bible, you understand that it's not a book. It's a bibliotheque. Bibliotheca. And bibliotheque is a whole library. And in the library, there is variety of books. So when people say, the Bible says so-and-so, I can always give you a counterpart. And it's very clear. So it always frightens me when people are ready to draw a sword because the Bible says. Look somewhere else and the Bible says something else. So first of all, we have to recognize it's a whole library. Then why didn't I call in the title of the course the Hebrew Bible? Well, maybe I have six students. Because who speaks Hebrew here? That is always a problem. And if they say yes, Hebrew Bible, what about the Hebrew Bible in French? What about, you know what I mean? I can't call it, let's go to here, for example. I can't call it the Old Testament. Because by saying the Old Testament, as opposed to the New Testament, I'm meaning the old, the passé, the one that is not important anymore. Like my children said, the old mom. You know, say so. So the word old has a very sort of negative. So I don't want to call it the Old Testament. It's my Bible. So then, but I say I couldn't call it the Hebrew Bible because you say when we don't speak Hebrew, we don't come. So what should we call it? So I would say just call it the Bible. Because for the New Testament, you can emphasize the New Testament. Or this is maybe the best, but since not many people here speak Hebrew, then I don't really expect you to maybe use it, and it's called the Tanakh. Tanakh is the abbreviation of the Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim. Can you see the T, N, and K? And if you see my Bible here, that's my Hebrew Bible. I don't go, I suppose, anywhere around this, but it's the Torah is a bit shorter. I'll show you later on, I have some slides of it. The Nevi'im, the prophets. Prophets is the quite a bigger part, and then the Ketuvim is all the written material, it's wisdom, literature, etc. We'll see. The size of the Tanakh, the size of the Bible is 304,901 Hebrew words. You do not count words of the Bible in English, because every 2 years, 3 years, they have a new translation. I mean, can you imagine, just that you finish, you put the last 10, half a million, and then say, oh, I have a new edition for you, and you go and start again. The Hebrew Bible, I personally counted it, it's 304,901. It's supposed to be, and it's from a Bible, you can see. It's supposed to be 304,903. How do I know? Because on two occasions in the Bible, the words are saved and not written. They discovered that there was a mistake, somebody dropped the word, and I can prove it, it's all clear to see. So the truth is, when you read it, you have 304,903. So don't say that Silly Raspberry is lying, just please consider that this is the written word. And the verse says there are 23,145. Now you'll be surprised and you'll say, why is she not telling us numbers of chapters, for example? Because, let's go here, the division into chapters was done by a monk in the 16th century. 16th century now, the Bible is for 20th century before the Common Era. So for 3,500 years, there were no chapters. There was only verses. I'll show you how it's written, how it's copied. It's very beautiful. But this is, by the way, you can see straight away that it's not good division. How? Look in the Genesis number 1. So even if you fall asleep after a few chapters, that's chapter 1. I mean, you can't fall asleep on chapter 1. So, when you finish chapter 1, it says that God created the world, and it only shows you after the 6th day. say, I am marking this on the book of the Yashar. So there was a book, a famous book, Yashar. Where is the book? The book is gone. There is a few references in the Bible to the books of the list of the kings. It's not what we have today. It's another, and we don't have it anymore. So there are, we know of books. We know that there were some prophetess, very clever prophetesses, and somebody didn't like them. Maybe they put it in the canon of the women or something. No, anyway, it's wrong. So somebody made a choice not to include it. And there are the books that didn't get into the Bible, because I'll show you when the Bible was canonized and they didn't make it. It seems that happened at a particular time, it was too late to get in. How do we know and where are these books? It's called the Apocrypha. And we have fantastic glimpses of it. And it is not in the Old Testament and not in the New Testament. But the Catholics have the Bible, and between the Old Testament and the New Testament, they have a middle section, and it's called the Apocrypha. In Hebrew, it's called Sfarim Chitzoniim, the outside books. It's the books that didn't quite make it in. So, we have, for example, the book of Maccabees,
etc., which we use often, we learn from it history, etc., but it,
and it's written like the Bible, the vision of verses,
etc., but it's not. Now, time frame.
What is the Bible telling us? Is it about last night? Is it about last week? The ski holiday? Is it what? When did it start? What is it covering? And when is it finished? So, we have to say that it's from the creation of the world, because Genesis 1 says, in the beginning God created heaven and earth. But I'm going to tell you something about this creation of the world. It's called primordial. You might pronounce it better than I do, but that's how it's written. So you can go look in the dictionary, and I'll explain to you what is this primordial history. And then, if you ask me, if you press me, and you say, if I really want to know history, and what can I learn from which period to which period? Then I will say it's from 2000 before the Common Era to about 333. It's not exactly 333, it might be 331. I like numbers, easy numbers to remember. Because we cannot exactly say the year, but it's that is what sort of is well stand on, because it's a Persian. We'll come to it in a minute. And by the way, are you with me on the BCE? It used to be BC before Christ and AD.
I'm dominant, but because all scholars in the world, because we have many that are not Christians, and then they feel before the Common Era, after the Common Era, so or just the Common Era. So what is primordial history?
I would like to mention and then we can move on. The first 11 chapters of the Bible, it's not really history. It's, when we talk, I think it's already something about the reflection of life. That's how the ancient people thought the world was created. It's called the scientific part of the Bible. Now, why do we need these 11 chapters? What happened is Abraham, from the year 2000 BCE, Abraham, the first forefather, the first Hebrew, Jew, or what is called a Christian and Muslim, Abraham came from Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia was a center of culture, and you know, it's always what you're doing here. You can go and play in the rain or go to the beach, isn't it? Or do your washing, I don't know. What you're doing here, humans tend to be, thinking humans tend to strive to know more. Now, in Mesopotamia, a center of culture, and against Rahel Rose, you know, it came up and then. And as he was talking, I was thinking, interesting, he could have written the Bible in his name. So we cannot dismiss it. But it's quite beautiful how people were pondering and how they put it pen on paper. So it's amazing. So the creation of the world is there. One of the major questions of humanity is, why are we different? Why do we talk different languages? Why some of us are darker in complexion? Some of us have curly hair? Some of us have short hair? I don't know. They wonder about this. And why are we separate? And that gave rise, that's the raison d'etre, that's the reason of the existence of the story of the Tower of Babel. Then there was the question of what is the rainbow? What is this? It's raining, but it's... Yeah. And that's not came about. And why do I say it's not necessarily just from the Bible or something? Because in Mesopotamia, we have so many records very similar to this. And in Egypt, very similar. Each one of the cultures emphasized the important issues to them. But it's still, so Noah, in Mesopotamia, why was the flood in the world? It's written in a story by the book of Gilgamesh. Why was the flood in Gilgamesh? So it says because the god drank it too much and went crazy. Okay, for them it was good enough. But it was not good like this in the Bible. Because the ethos of the Bible is reward and punishment. If you're good, you'll be rewarded. If you're bad, you'll be punished. So the same story, in fact, is told in the Bible, is that the evil people were punished and the flood wiped them out, while Noah and the good people survived. And so it's the same story, each one. So there was some, the primordial history, it's how ancient people, in the whole world it's called the Fertile Crescent. Fertile Crescent is from Mesopotamia, to Israel, Canaan, to Egypt. It's the crescent, the fertile crescent. They, until today, if you go to Israel, you can say, can we go through it to the King's Highway? King's Highway is the road that they used to walk from Mesopotamia all the way to Egypt. So it's still...
By primordial history, I wouldn't vouch by this that it's indeed that what happened. Because it's more of a philosophical issue that they wanted to solve. So, what is the timeline?
So, if you, from Genesis 12 onward, when something is told, don't dismiss it so quickly. One of the issues that straight away people dismiss, and they say to me, oh, silly, don't be funny, how can somebody live 900 years? Methuselah, you know, he lived 900. I said, hold it. In the old days, they called every month a year. 90 years, 90 months, it's a good age in that time when they didn't have low blood pressure tablets and anti-cholesterol and all this, okay. So 90 months was like the absolutely fantastic in Methuselah, but otherwise, so from Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, by the way, when you read something and even if somebody mocks it, say let's look at it carefully, what it is and what we don't know maybe, and it will be getting through. So if we think about Abraham and all these forefathers, they had wives, of course, and the three of them, Abraham, his son Isaac and his son Jacob, all of them had difficulty in conceiving babies. So let's say that together, and Jacob had 12 sons, you know, the 12 tribes. So let's think it's about 100 years. Today, my children, 30 years old, and they are not even getting babies. At this time, they were married when they were 14 or 15. So, but if I say 100 years old now, 100 years old together, you agree with me, sort of, because they say that they delayed and they couldn't conceive, etc., etc. So, okay, so it brings us to another 100 years. Egypt, we are told that they were 400 years slaves in Egypt, after which Moses took them out and it was the Exodus. So if you, I don't like remembering, you know, the exact year or something, I want to
Egypt, they wander in the around the desert
some years, and then his successor was Joshua, and he conquered the land, and there were some judges. It was, I think, one of my students, Jennifer Cohen, told me the English term for this. It was confederacy of tribes. In other words, they called them a nation, but they were not a nation. There was Reuben, Judah, Israel, and others. They were not united. How do we know? In the book of Judges, when you read, it always said that there was a problem in a particular place, the other brothers, the other tribes didn't think about it to come and help them. So there is some, each one was sort of, they didn't have that notion of togetherness, of people. And that is important to remember. That's why many times Saul, the first king, Saul, many people said he wasn't really king, he was like one of the judges, because he preferred to sit at his own home. Look, on one hand, he was not corrupt, he didn't build palaces or something, so you could say, you can see it as a positive. But on the other hand, people say he did not pull the people together, he just helped, like, put out fires whenever there was a problem. And why David? David is considered as the king. He is from another dynasty altogether, he's from another tribe, from the tribe of Judah. And what he done, he pulled the nation together. He made what is called the United Kingdom of Israel. And though he was in Judea, from the tribe of Judah, he did not leave his home in Judah. He went, and there is a very funny story we are going to, I think it's Wednesday, very funny how they conquered the city. He conquered the city in the middle of the land. He said to the Jebusites, I need your city. They said, don't be funny. The city of Jerusalem is like Teddy Mountain, you know, it's from the valley, it's like up there. They said, you never managed to conquer it. He said, where are you? And he didn't get it. But why did he get it? And here is the issue that I wanted to emphasize today, is that he thought he will not sit in one tribe, because then it's preferential treatment. He will sit in a normal land. You know who learned from him, of course. The Americans. Washington, D.C. is a district by itself, because otherwise, why should it be the capital? They did not want to put it in one of the states as such. So, you see, the Americans learned from David. I wonder if they spoke Hebrew. Was a man of war, he pulled the people together, and so he was told not to build the temple, his son Solomon did. And don't look at this, I just gave you, so whoever wants to later check history this year. If you remember, 2000 before, it's the forefathers and the foremothers. 1500, it's Moses, the Exodus. 1000, it's David. Can you see? So, you know, Solomon was just after David. Solomon the idea of United Kingdom. He was the most powerful country leader in the Mediterranean at the time. Quite amazing. You know, we always think it's a little country, but one of the holidays, when he built the temple and Jerusalem and the walls, he said that it's the holiday of Sukkot, the tabernacles, it's actually the holidays of the nations of the world, all the nations. And everybody used to come to Jerusalem. And until today, many people from around the world come around September, October, it's the tabernacles. Because of the temple, it was, and we'll talk about this maybe later, but what I want to say, why do I mention him as a builder of the United Kingdom? Because David said to them, you are one for all and all for one. But you know, you tell them 100 times, and not always people listen. Solomon was a builder. He was a renovator. So he built Jerusalem into a magnificent city, he built the wall, he built palaces, he had 1,000 wives, what do you want? One woman wants one house, can you imagine 1,000 wives? Especially one of his wives was Pharaoh's daughter. He obviously wanted to have a treaty with Egypt. So he married Pharaoh's daughter. Now Pharaoh's daughter doesn't want to live here in the basement that you should dig. She wanted a palace, so he had to build another palace. So Solomon was busy, so now, where will he get the money? and bring all the ladies, come and cook for me. And I. And if you're having a woman, can you come and for me this way? This is a very interesting because they hated him. But they had a very good reason to unite. Not just in the emotion that now they're working like slaves. They were very much against him, but they became people. It is quite amazing how sometimes something which is considered in a way negative and rise negative emotions, in fact, had unbelievable good impact for future. So this division out of tribes into what in Hebrew is called Nafa. Nafa is a section, made the country into one. Unfortunately, Solomon was the wisest people of all men on earth, as we are told in the Bible, but his son was not as clever. And when Solomon died, the son was very young. And when the representatives came and said, can you release us, please, of these taxes? Enough. We did enough. We have enough palaces. We have enough. We can't take it anymore. The older people, advisors, said to him, tell them, yeah, it will be okay. Because they were wiser. The young people, his friends, said to him, tell them you are the king, you will decide. And he came out with two idioms that I can never forget. It upset me to my core whenever I read it. He says, my pinky, my little finger, it's small. My small little finger is thicker than my father's waist. In other words, you thought that my father needed it, now this is nothing compared to what I'm going to do. What kind of error was it? And then he said, number two, this famous sentence, my father hit you with whips, and I will hit you with scorpions. Now, whips are painful, but scorpions are deadly. So, I want to tell you something. Most of the tribes of Israel turn around and say, we want nothing to do with the dynasty of David and Saul and nothing. And they left. And the kingdom split. And at that time, 10 tribes went to the north. And in Jerusalem, in Judea, only Yehuda, the one tribe stayed, Levites stayed because they were working in the temple. And we know that one of the tribes,
you'll see, there you go. The small tribes, okay, let me go back for a second. Simon
was swallowed into Judah before. So in fact, it's called Judah versus Israel. The whole 10 tribes were in the north, and the little one was in Judea. Now the northern kingdom had a new capital, Samaria. There were 10 tribes. Then the variety of dynasties, they keep changing kings.
The kings are, it's so funny, it's changed up and down. Some of them are 48 years, one of them is 7 days. So whenever they didn't like somebody, they bumped him off.
Not like this in Jerusalem. There's the southern kingdom, it's called Judah or Judah. Also because the tribe of Yehuda, now it impact on the name of the area, Judea, and it was the tribe of Yehuda, Simon and Levi together. It was always, always the house of David. Even if they didn't approve of the king's action, they never killed them, or there was no revolt as such. And they eventually disappeared. In 721, the Assyria at the time was the power, because I told you, Solomon was the power in about 900, when he built the temple. But after the kingdom split, Assyria became the power, and at 721 they took them away. 150 years later, Babylon came and got rid of the Judea. They took them exiled to Babylon. Now, I want to tell you something. Does it puzzle you? How many tribes of Israel? 12, isn't it? Jacob had 12 sons, 12 tribes of Israel. So how come I'm telling you 10? Do you think I failed my maths?
No, I did not. That's an interesting fact. The answer is 13 tribes. But Jacob had 12 sons. So why do we say 12? 12, everything 12? Ah, Joseph, there is no tribe of Joseph, isn't it? His two sons, each one of them was considered as a tribe by itself. He was considered as a loved son, he was the king second to Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed his two children, Ephraim and Menashe. Also, we have on the on Thursday, I think we have an unbelievable story about them. Ephraim and Menashe, each one of them is a tribe. So why do we keep the Indian, the 12 tribes of Israel, and when you go, you see the map of Israel, sometimes they show it from biblical times, they see if you count, only 12. Yes, because Levi is the servant of God. They live in Jerusalem in the temple. They're supposed to look after the temple. So therefore they don't inherit. So this is just a little 12 tribes of Israel. What's the fate of the Hebrews?
The northern kingdom disappeared to Assyria, never to be seen again. A little while ago, maybe 30 years ago, there was a whole group of Japan, in Japan. They said they are part of the 10 tribes. Very nice. Some people in Ethiopia now say that they are part of the 10 tribes. But now, why did the Assyrians took them and plug them? People believe in local God. So the Assyrians couldn't leave the locals in this land because they thought they have a direct line to God. They wanted to attract them. So they took them to another country. They couldn't phone from another country. But they thought they didn't. Can you believe it? They thought that they cannot pray to God to save them if they are in another country. That's why they kept shifting from country to country. And they brought people because the land was in the northern side. All the way above Jerusalem was the northern section. And they put there other people from other countries. And they are called the Samaritans. Did you ever think, if you read the New Testament, who is the good Samaritan? Where does he come from? It's people that live in the northern section. Some of them say that they are the remnants of the 10 tribes that never were taken. Possible. But why they call Samaritan? Because the capital at that area was called Samaria. So whoever lived in this area was the Samaritan. Judea was exiled to Babylon. Then Babylon itself did not survive many years. The next kingdom, or the next power, empire, was Persia. And Persia is the first religion, the first culture in the world that it says it's Zoroastrianism. It says live and let live. So the king Cyrus said, what are you doing here? Go back to your land. You are supposedly my vessels, so go to your land, work the ground, and send me taxes. That's fine. I would like to enjoy the fruits of your labor, but I don't need you here. You can worship your own God and go back. So Cyrus is very famous. He permits them to return to the Holy Land, and they start building the second temple. And he sent with them, even Candelabra, the golden things, very surprisingly, he was a very tolerant man. And for me, you know, when people talk to you about the Babylonian exile, I always imagine as a child, when I was hundreds of years. But we're having stories of some people who saw the second temple built, and they stood and they cried, because they remembered the glory of the first temple. So they obviously were maybe 10 years old or something. You remember this magnificent thing of King Solomon? And when they came back 50 years later, it took a few years to start with the second temple, and it was nothing to compare, so it's quite also interesting thing that many of us don't always remember. So the time of the Bible, its time frame is from 2000 to about 333. Why mention 333? And it's the Persian time. Because the story of Daniel from Persia and Esther, there are some people that can debate it. I have some also understanding, I read research that the book of Daniel is even slightly after this. But if you remember 2000 before until 333, then you are fine, you are not out of the.
So, where do we find it? We remember, you remember we say Tanakh? The Torah, the prophets, Nevi'im, and the Ketuvim. The Torah is the first section.
The first section is only 5 books, and it's, look, you don't count pages in the Bible, but just that you know, it's about 350 in a book of 1,400. So it's comparatively small. It's smaller than the other. It's only 5 books. But it's considered the holiest section. We write it, these 5 books of Moses, we write it on parchment with special rules and regulations how to write it, and we put it in the Holy Ark in the synagogue. In the Holy Ark in the synagogue, you do not find all this. Only the first third, the Torah. There is special rules how to write it, so when you read a book here, and then you go and visit China synagogue and the offer it will look the same. Even the decoration of the letters or something is handwritten. Here it is. Every synagogue usually I'm sorry that it's a bit how you call it blurry, because I made the picture bigger. But can you see it? It's the custom is on this wooden thing, and as you read it, you read from right to left. So when you read it, you keep rolling it.
And you, this is a man writing it, and you are allowed to write only a certain number of lines a day, so you don't make mistakes.
You cannot connect the different parchments, part of parchment, with something with metal. Metal represents walls, so they make it with balls, needles, like, you know, with strings, etc. And if you make a mistake, you have to take the whole section. You can't. It's a special ink, and that is it is so susceptible to human oils, the body oils, that when you read, you're not allowed to touch it with your finger because the letters picking up, you pick up letters, and that's terrible. It costs hundreds of thousands of rand to have a Torah written, and there is a silver hand that when you read it, you are not allowed to touch it like this, because you remember when we had better sets, when we had project for school, then we had better sets. And if you didn't put it properly on the page, if you touch it, it twists on your finger. So that is very similar to this. So therefore, you are not allowed to touch it. It's usually kept in beautiful, like, or by material or silver. So.
Okay. So, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, it's in Genesis. Slavery in Egypt, it's the beginning of Exodus. Moses' law and history, from the Exodus to his death, it's the 5 books of Moses, which are Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy.
Deuteronomy meaning summary. So anything that you hear on the first book, 4 books, it's repeated, short, and to the point. The important points is in Deuteronomy. So if I ask you a question, how many times you find in the Bible the Ten Commandments? You have to say twice, and you are not wrong. One where it belongs in the book of Exodus, chapter 20, and the other one in Deuteronomy. So because Deuteronomy summarized. So that is, and it covers the period between 2000. It's considered that Moses wrote it. People that are, it's called fundamental. Don't mix it with extremists. Fundamental meaning to go back to the origin or to the source. Fundamentals say that God dictated it to Moses, and Moses wrote it. I don't necessarily always agree. There are certain issues there with language, but if you believe in this, it's fine. And even my children say, yes, but the last 7 verses tell of Moses' death. So how can you write it? I say, yes, there is a legend that he had to write that he is about to die on Mount Nebo. And he was writing it and crying.
But that's the 5 books of Moses, but now you know why. It's the last few verses, it's about his death. Now comes the chapter of the end, Nevi'im. I'll be
comparing this quick, because Nevi'im, if you speak Hebrew, Navi, it's a prophet. So you think, wonderful, in this big section, I'll find a lot of prophecies. I'll become so much wiser of God's wish. But it's not so. Half of it, it's
called early prophets.
And then it's later prophets. Nothing to do with early by years. The early prophets is the earlier books, the books here, and it's history. And the later prophets is the one that we know, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, the big ones, and then the 12 small ones. So it's interesting that even though people will say to you, I am in the prophets, not always prophets is about prophecy, it's also about some actions by David or misactions or whatever, misbehavior, etc. So, but that is in the early prophets. So in fact, if you want to read the history and you want to know the end of the whole history, you start in the book of Genesis and you finish in here, in the end of the early prophets. This is it, full stop. That's it. There is no more history after this. So in fact, in a way, the first half is history.
The second part is the real prophets. Who is the early prophets? You'll know it's Joshua, Judges, Samuel 1 and 2, and Kings 1 and 2. That's it. And the exiles finish in the end of Kings 2. That is the end. My friend,
Robert Steiner, he's a priest here, he's terrific. If you need to go to church, go. And Robert said to me, you know, I'm going through the book of Joshua, and it's very difficult for me to read how they conquered the land, but they were not exactly like today. It's not PC. You know, they didn't have a boom, and, I mean, they killed them. And I said to him, there's 39 books here. Why do you have to choose this one? It's not a nice one. It's not like today's.
Anyway, so the books are there, but that's the history. The prophets are Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, the big ones, and then Hosea, Joel, Amos, my favorite, as you know,
and Obadiah, Zechariah, etc. They are from different times.
Not always you know everything about them. For example,
I'll just give you an example, cute one. Can you see Micah? Micah is a very small Micha, a small book. Too similar to Isaiah. We think it's an option. Hori was his student that wrote, he was his scribes or something, and then somebody just took some of the chapters that he copied.
It's too close for comfort. If it would be at UCT, that would be plagiarism.
So, now we're coming to Ketuvim, the K, Tanakh, and it's the books, it's the wisdoms and historiography. And we have, of course, the Psalm of Job, which is magnificent. We have a book of women we study, and just one day, we took some verses from Proverbs. I think it was a memorable lesson. It was, you know, whatever you think, it's sweet. It's like pearls, really. Take it and have a look at this. You will. Job, as you know, it's a sad story. We will talk about this in another day. And now the five Megillot. Megillot, the word Megillot is a scroll. It's the same with the Bible, I showed you written on the parchment. The Megillot are written on parchment and they are rolled. The word to roll something, it's Megillah, legalgel. The five Megillot are Song of Songs, Ruth, Lamentations, Ecclesiastes, and Esther. Afterwards come Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Chronicles. And Chronicles 1 and 2 is the one, like Deuteronomy was for the Torah, like the summary. Chronicle is the summary of the whole thing. But we read, I think it's on Thursday, we have the hand that holds the pen, rules the word. So you see variations there in Chronicle, because it was David's scribes writing most of it, so they keep adding. But all in all, if you want to look at the general picture, Chronicle will finish. Let's talk for a moment about the Megillot, and then why, because you'll see I'm leading to a particular place. The five Megillot, the five scrolls, are little stories, Song of Song or Song of Solomon. It's a very erotic book of few chapters, and it's a love of a man to a woman to Bible because he was so boring. And instead of listening to him, we used to look at the book of Song under the desk. Because you know, when you're 17 and you say, you bless them so beautiful and you fight them so wonderful. So this is something which is really a big turn on. So, there is other books that didn't make it to the canon. And there is a lot of debates in post-biblical literature. Why are we keeping this book? And one of the saying is by Rebbe Akiva. He was a great scholar. And he said, this is the holiest of the book. Why? Because it talks of a pure love, like it's uncontrollable love and desire. And it's not just a man and a woman, physical man and physical woman, even though it could fool me in the description of the body. He says that it's a pure love between Israel and God, or the community and God. So it's quite nice. Read it, and if you see it as a pure love, it has something very beautiful about it. Now, the second book is Ruth. We have quite a little discussion about this. Another day, you know, the Ruth, it's the Moabite, she comes with her mother-in-law Naomi and to Israel, it's Ruth, and it happens at the time of the harvest. It's an important issue, I'll come back to it. Lamentation is the book written by Jeremiah. Isaiah was in the 8th century, Jeremiah was during, in the 6th century, it's when Israel went to Babylon on exile. It says that he was very unloved, he was a bachelor, he didn't know to be PC, and he told them, be careful, it's coming, and they didn't believe him. Eventually, when they came and they took them to exile, the Babylonian let him go and he went down to Egypt. And he laments the fate of Jerusalem. So this is Lamentation. Ecclesiastes is the wisdom of, it's in Hebrew, it's called Kohelet. Kohelet, it's audience, it's King Solomon's wisdom. We read it on Tabernacles when the nations of the world coming. And then Esther is Purim. It's the Greek, the Persian, you know, time. So, why are we having it in this order? Excuse me, what's the logic in it? Song of Songs, it's love, wood, it's harvest, lamentation. We keep it according to the Jewish year. The Jewish year starts in the spring in Passover. Passover is the Exodus, is the absolute love and trust. It's like a marriage. Your husband come and take you and the Exodus and this. And therefore, Song of Songs we read on Passover. 7 weeks later is the harvest. And the holiday of, how do you call it, Shavuot? Pentecost, you know, it's the harvest time, you read wood. 7 weeks later is lamentation, because it's the days that the temples, both temples were destroyed 2 days apart in Av. So the middle day is lamenting, it's Tisha B'Av, the night of Av. And then comes the Jewish New Year and the Tabernacles. So we read this, Ecclesiastes, it's the holiday of the nations. And then Purim is a month before Song of Songs, before Passover. So, these 5 scrolls in the Bible have to go in order, not because of any logic, because it's to adhere to the order of the Jewish year and how we read the certain holidays, we read them. Okay, Daniel and Ezra. So why am I telling you this? Why do I bore you?
Tomorrow it's more interesting. Why do I tell you all the details? Number one,
it's good to know the geography of the Bible. If you would say to me where there is the argument between Michal and David, I would say to you, the war is in 1 Samuel 9, most likely it's 1 Samuel 12. If you know the basics, you can guess within a chapter or two the whole geography of the Bible. It's so easy. So number one, I wanted to give you some tools of knowing how it works. And we'll use it during the week. But also I thought, aha, now if you have the Bible, in other words, is it from a Jewish publication society, or is it from Christian? Is it just the Old Passé, Old Testament? So how do you know this? This is very easy to detect. Because what happened? And first of all, why should we detect? Maybe you want to know if there are some biases, already Christian tendency in the very famous, is hard to teach him, in the very famous is the book of Isaiah. There are some chapters of Eved Adonai, the servant of God. Look carefully at chapter 66, the 60s, it's a lot about the servant of God. The Christian Bible, when it's Old Testament, it's from Christian publication, they will already hint or use words in English, or German or French, or whatever translation, that already give you the clue that it is prophecies about Jesus. The Hebrew Publication Society, even if it will be in French or Hebrew or English, etc., but they will keep it very clear, the servant of God. Because if you can read it as the servant of God, as the nation. So, it's not a big deal. The Jewish Publication Society, because it comes usually from Israel or America, is very expensive. My students say, oh, I can't afford Bible, it costs 300 rand. So I say, fine, go to TMA, buy it for 50 rand. They say, but it won't be enough to do this, they don't tell you, Rabbi. Because there is no logic in keeping it together. If it's an other book from the normal Bible and it's the Old Testament, then where is the length of the book? Lamentation will be next to Jeremiah. You wrote it, so it will be Jeremiah. And Ruth was in the day of the Judges, so it will be the book of Judges, the book of Ruth. So like this, you know immediately where you...
So you think you got your money worth? Five Megillot will give you the clue. So now, when we know what is the Bible, in the course,
in this course, in the next 4 days, we are going to look at it closer. It will be more fun, I think. We start tomorrow with the power of words and names, from the names of the books, names of people, places, etc. Thank you.
I'm giving